Good morning, everybody. Boker Tov, and welcome. Last week, we spoke about people who have difficulty eating wheat matzah, and we looked a little bit at what the other options were for people who are either celiacs or people who are gluten-free or gluten intolerant. We talked about oat matzahs, and we talked about stealth matzahs, and I promised you this week that we talk about something related and also, I think, very fascinating, which is, let's say somebody is able to have a wheat matzah, or all they have is wheat matzah, but they want to make sure that they eat not more than they absolutely have to because of health reasons or other reasons we'll see. What is the minimal shear? What is the minimal amount that a person can eat on Seder night? In other words, what is a kezayit? And this question is a question that comes up every single year. And as the years go on, people have more and more to say on this and perhaps more and more to eat as well. And I wanted to go through this and give you something of a halachic biography of the development of the kezayit over time. I'm not the first person to do this, and I've made reference in the source sheet here to lots of other makorot at the bottom. But let's see how we get on with this and move it forward from where it begins, we'll see soon, to where we are today. Now, even though we seem to eat a lot in the name of religion, as Jewish people, actually it may come as a surprise that there are very few Torah obligations to actually eat anything. Most of what we eat is either a minhag, or just because we enjoy eating, or it may be a mitzvah drabanon, like eating on Shabbat and Yom Tov. But the three remaining mitzvahs, d'oraisa, to eat, one of them certainly is a mitzvah, the other two also, probably, but not quite in the same way, is, first of all, the mitzvah to eat a kezayit of matzah on Seder night. We'll see that source in a moment. But then there's also a parallel mitzvah to eat a kezayit in the sukkah on the first night sukkah. So that's, you don't have to eat matzah, you can eat bread for that if you want. And then there's the mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Which I know people who take very seriously, that they're nibbling all day. Some people nibble all day, every day. But on Erev Yom Kippur, some people make sure that they have something to eat on a regular basis. That is also a mitzvah, probably a mitzvah d'oraisa. But certainly the mitzvah that we have, without any question, the Chasam Sofer talks about this, is the mitzvah to eat on Seder night. Look in source number one. Berishon ba'arba asa yom l'chodesh, at the very beginning of the Hag, on the night of the 14th, ba'erev tochlu matzah. In the evening, you must eat matzah. All the way through till the 21st. And last week, we talked about the fact that is there a mitzvah to eat matzah 7 days or only on the first day? And we saw there the Shita of the Gaon, which we'll come back to at the end, which is the more the merrier. The more matzah you eat during Pesach, each piece of matzah is another mitzvah. But really, everybody agrees that the only chiyuv, the only obligation, is to eat a kezayit on the first night. We'll get to where we get a kezayit from in a minute. Here we see, at least in the posik, that the posik says, eat matzah on that evening. What does it mean to eat? Now, this may seem to be an obvious question, but it's not an obvious question. How much is called eating? At what point does nibbling become eating? How fast do you have to eat in order to be called eating? If you just take a little crumb every 3 or 4 minutes, is that really called eating? So Chazal obviously needs to define this. This is important for many, many mitzvot. And there are lots of times in the Torah where it says to eat or not to eat. We have lots of not to eat still. You are not allowed to eat nevela, not allowed to eat pork, not allowed to eat bazav v'chalav, etc., etc. What does it mean to actually eat? At what point are you doing that avera or that mitzvah? Obviously, in the time of the Mikdash, there were many, many mitzvahs to positively eat, to eat kodshim, maybe to eat truma, etc., etc. So let's have a look at that now. The first point, more of an introductory point here, is that achila, whenever it says achila in the pasuk, it means a kezayit. Chazal say this in a number of places. I brought you here the Sifra, this dealing with nevela, not eating an animal which has been killed inappropriately. It says number 2, asher tochal, when it says you must not eat something. Ein achila pechuta mikezayit. Achila can never be less than a kezayit. Where do we know that from? So Chazal in Sukkah say the following, number 3. Da'amar Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi Amar Rav, Shi'urin, Chatzitzin, Umechitzin, Halacha Lamoshe Mitzinai. We know these Shi'urim, a Kezayit, and we'll see soon, a Kegregeres and a Kekoseves. We know these from Sinai, these are part of the oral law transmitted. Shi'urin, says the Torah, Doraisahu, says the Gemara, aren't they in the Torah itself? What do you mean they're part of the oral law? They seem to be part of the written law. Why? Dichtiv, doesn't it say Eretz Chito Sa'ora V'Gefi V'Te'ena V'Rimon Eretz Zeit Shemen Udvash? Doesn't it go through all of these fruits that Eretz Yisrael is famous for? And the Gemara there wants to say each of these fruits itself is a remez, is a hint to a certain shear, a certain volume of this one is a this and this one is a that. And when it gets to Kezait, it says Eretz Zeit Shemen Eretz Shekol Shiurea Kezaitim. Our land is a land where all its shiurim are kezaitim. It's an olive size. Says the Gemara, Kol shiurei kezaitim. Really? All the shiurim are kezaitim? Aren't there other shiurim that kezaitim or this and that? So he says, no. Haika hanika damrina. Aren't there the other things that we went through, which we didn't go through now, but the other fruits in that posik? Ela ema, you have to say, shiroiv shiurei kezaitim. Most of the shiurim in the Torah, in the halachic system, says here, are kezaitim. Alma doraita ninhu. Doesn't it therefore say that in the Pasuk, Eretz Zeit Shemen Udvash, to tell us these Shirim are Kezaitim? But Tisbara, does it make sense to say that? Shirim Miksivi, is that Pasuk really talking about Shiurim amounts to eat? No. Ela Hilchasa Ninhu, they are really from Halach, Lamosh Mitzinai, Vekra Asmachta Ba'alma. The Pasuk, it doesn't Asmachta, it's a hint. We're not really learning a Kezait out from that reference to an olive in that Pasuk. We're really learning it from Halach Lemosh Misinai. It comes as a tradition from Sinai. And therefore, we know that a Kezait is a relevant amount, and that Pasuk is merely a hint to that. Why? Why did Chazal express in the Torah itself in this hint, why did it express it in terms of fruit? Why not just give us an amount in pounds or in grams or in whatever the equivalent was? We'll see soon. So looking number four, this is going to be a very important source, which we'll see soon. The Ga'onim have a very interesting perspective on this. This is from Rav Haigon. Number four says, V'nishla ha-Ga'onim, the Ga'onim were asked, V'davazah eizah hu shir meduk-dak. What are the specific shirim? Be'shivu, and they answered, L'chein nitna Torah shir be-beitzim or be-peiros. The Torah gave us shirim in eggs, or in fruit, as we've seen, olive, dates, figs. Shedivrei Seifrim Nitnu al Har Sinai, because the words are the Halach al Moshe Mitzinai, the oral law was given on Sinai. Now that's a bigger shir, in fact, it's a bigger series of shirim. The position of the Gaonim was very much that the Halach al Moshe Mitzinai was indeed given in full on Sinai and passed down. The Rambam took a slightly different view on certain areas of oral law, which I'm not getting into now. But it says these were passed down to us, Kidiksiv Alehim Kokol Hadvarim. All of these matters were said at Sinai. That's a reference to the Aseret Sedivres. And eggs and olives and fruit are everywhere. Everyone can get access to eggs and olives. We'll see if that's true in a minute. Because God himself knew that Jewish people will be spread and scattered amongst the people. And the weights and measures that they used in the time of Moshe, and then they added to some of the weights they added to in Eretz Israel in amount and in number. We won't have those anymore. We live now in Israel, America, England, whatever. We don't measure things the way they did then. Just one second. Weights and measures change from country to country, from generation to generation. People invent new things. Yes. We'll get to that. The Ga'onim lived in Babel. They had plenty of olives in Babel. Okay? We'll get to Northern Europe soon. Okay? So the Ga'onim say here, very interestingly, the reason the Chazal expressed and the Torah expresses olives and eggs and dates is because everybody has access to olives and eggs and dates. If they expressed it in silver coins, well, what kind of silver coins? What weight of silver coins? We'll see in a minute how that works. So there is a concept of a shear. Just go over to page two. Two points which I want to make before we get into the main discussion here is, so, okay, I'm not allowed to eat a kezayit of nevela. And if I eat a kezayit of nevela, that is called eating nevela. What if I nibble less than a kezayit? Is this such a thing as a chatzi shear? Are you allowed to eat just a nibble of pork, but not a kezayit of pork? Is that allowed? So the answer is no, it's not allowed. The question is why not? So this is quite a famous machlokas. I'm not really focusing on this in full today, but I want to mention it. The Gemara in Yuma debates this. Chatzi shi'ur, we're talking about a half shear of an aveira, eating a little bit of a prohibited thing, or eating a little bit on Yom Kippur.
What's the deal? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan said, Asur min HaTorah. The Torah prohibits even a crumb of something which is prohibited. Reish Lakish Amar, Reish Lakish says, no, Mutar min HaTorah. Its prohibition is rabbinic only. Obviously the rabbis made offense to say you can't start nibbling bits of pork because before you look round, you'll have eaten a kazayas. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the Torah itself says you can't eat even small amounts. What is the basis for the machlokas? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Asa min HaTorah. Why? Why is it also to eat even a particle of pork? Keivan dechazil it's surufe, since it adds up ultimately to a kazayas. Isura ta'achal, it must be asa. The logic here is very sound, which is, if on a Torah level, eating a minute amount of pork was like a zero, you didn't do anything wrong, then you eat another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. How can zero plus zero plus zero plus zero equal one? Eventually you ate a kazayit, which, oh, now you did an aveira. How? Every single little bit that I ate was fine. So how could that add up to an aveira? Says Rabbi Yochanan, it must be that every little bit was not fine. You just hadn't hit the critical mass yet. At a certain point, you hit the critical mass. Reish Lakish Amar, Reish Lakish says, no, mutar min HaTorah. Why? He doesn't focus on the food. What is the quality of the food? He focuses on the action of the eater. Achila Amar Rachmana. The Torah said, don't eat. Falaika, and you didn't eat. You nibbled. At the point at which you eat, so that's called eating. Nibbling is not eating, and therefore on his, he says that eating tiny amounts is only prohibited on a rabbinic level, not on a Torah level. Very fascinating machlokas. Which way do we paskin? Very clearly we paskin, like Rabbi Yochanan looking Rambam, that it's awesome in our Torah. Number six, achal o shata pachas mishir zeh. If you ate or drank less than a shir, he's talking about on Yom Kippur, elu chayev kareis. You are not chayev kareis, you did not hit the critical mass for the full consequence. Afal pi shehu asur min HaTorah, even though indeed it is, like Rabbi Yochanan, prohibited on a Torah level, v'chati shir if you eat less, ein chiyuv karis ela al kishir. You're only chayiv the punishment or the malchus or karis or whatever it is on the shir. V'ha'oichel ha'shoyti cheti shir makinos ha'makras maros. Okay, if you eat less than a shir, there are consequences on a rabbinic level, but they're not consequences in terms of based in on a Torah level, but you're still prohibited to eat that. So everyone agrees that a chati shir is asur min HaTorah. An interesting side question is, what about a chatzi aveira, not a chatzi shir? Let's say on Shabbos, it says you're not allowed to lift something up in a private domain and carry it and put it down in a public domain. That's called carrying. What if I just did half of that? Is that a bad thing? Or is that just like a nothing? A chatzi aveira is like nothing, meaning eating a little bit of pork, so each bit of pork is prohibited. But what about half doing an aveira? Or is that just a nothing at all? A very interesting question. What about a chatzi shir in a qualitative way, rather than a quantitative way? For example, you're not allowed to heat up metal on Shabbos until it glows. Okay? What if I heat it up past Yad Saledit Bo, so it is hot, halakhically, but it's not glowing yet? Did I do anything wrong? Is that a chatzi shir? Or is that, that's a discussion which is not for now, it's for another time, but that's an interesting question. But there is a concept of chatzi shir in eating in that sense for an aveira. Is there a concept of chatzi shir for a mitzvah? Now this is much less talked about. I heard a very interesting shir on why you Torah. I was listening to it on the way in. I just found it. It's not mentioned on the sheet by someone called Moshe Tzvi Weinberger, I think, in why you Torah, where he talks about chatzi shir of a mitzvah. What does that mean, chatzi shir of a mitzvah? Okay, I'm not allowed to eat a minute amount of pork. That adds up to a kazayas. But what if I eat a tiny bit of matzah, which is everybody agrees is less than a kazayas? Is that anything? Is there such a thing as eating less than the shear of a mitzvah? For example, let's say two people are stuck on a desert road, like the case, the famous case with Rabbi Akiva and Ben Batura. But in this case, it's not that they're dehydrating with a bottle of water, but they are on Seder night, and they're stuck together, and they only have one kazayas of matzah. And Shlomi says to Reuven, what shall we do? Shall we eat half a kazayas each? So at least we each got a little bit of matzah. Or is that actually, well, that's nothing. What is half a kazayas? That's gornished. Maybe one of them should eat the matzah, and the other one doesn't get anything, but at least somebody did a mitzvah. Or is it taka better to even split? Or in a case, Ben Ish Chai brings a case, that case, by the way, is brought in the Shari Tshuva on Shulchan Aruch. What if the Ben Ish Chai says somebody has medical reasons why they cannot eat a kazayit, even the minimal kazayit, which we'll get to. The doctor says, yes, you can take a nibble, but nibble is all you can do. Is there any benefit in having a nibble of matzah on Seder night. And without getting into all of the ins and outs of that, I brought you in 7 and 8 from the Minchas Chinuch. He goes back and forth. This is a very big debate, a topic in the Achronim. Some say yes, it is a mitzvah. Some say no, it isn't a mitzvah. Some say in between, it's a kind of weak mitzvah. And I'm not getting into that now because it's not really my shir for today. But just so that you know, there is a discussion. Is there benefit? And some will say yes in eating a little bit of matzah, even if you didn't eat a shir. Certainly there's no downside. There's no downside in eating a little bit of matzah. The question is there any upside? And then that leads to the parallel question, is there a chatzi shir of doing a mitzvah, like, let's say on Rosh Hashanah, you have a shofar, and you can only blow tekiahs. You don't know how to blow teruahs. So is there any benefit to pick up a shofar and blow tekiah, 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 because that's all it can do. Does that do anything? Or do we say, well, no, that's not the mitzvah. You may as well blow a trumpet. It's just nothing. Or do we say, well, no, at least you blew a tekiah. You didn't blow tekiah, teruah tekiah, etc. That's an interesting discussion, again, which is discussed in the Achronim, but it's not really our topic for now. Our topic for now, over the page, all of this is by way of introduction, is how big is a kezias. And somehow or other, at the risk of being dramatic, the question I'm asking is, how did this turn into this? Okay? And that's really what we're asking. Okay? And by the way, this is from last year. It's the last remnants of last year's hand matzahs. And we'll see that there's a story here, how this becomes something more like this. And I want to trace the story through from the beginning to the present day. And I want to show you actually that there are seven stages in the way that the kezias, if you like, grew into what we have today. And at the end, we'll talk a little bit about halacha lemaisa. I'm not paskini any shilas. Please ask your local rav if you have issues, how much you can eat, and what, etc. Please ask somebody about what the psak is for you. But let's just learn it together. So let's start with an obvious question. How big is an olive? Well, I brought you one of my little olives from my olive tree in the garden, and you'll see it's quite small. Actually, olives come in many, many different sizes, and I brought you on the top of page 3. There is actually legally, in terms of trading, a scale. Different countries have different scales. This is the United States scale of olives, and they go from everything from what they call like smaller than sub-petite, where they're very, very tiny, and you could fit 400 or so in a kilogram, which means that they're 2 or 3 cubic centimeters each. And for the sake of clarity, I'm just going to speak in cubic centimeters. I'm sorry, I don't do fluid ounces. You'll have to convert somehow to fluid ounces if you want to, but I'm going to stick to cc's. So olives come from very tiny ones to super colossal olives. And this is not a halachic analysis. This is taken from the trading analysis on the olive market. And super colossal olives are really quite big. They're more than 4 or 5 times the size of more than that of the little olives. And there you'll be talking more like 18, 19 cc's rather than 3, 4 cc's. So our question is, well, the kezias is an olive. Before we even get to how an olive may turn into something this big, how big is an olive? Which kind of olive are they looking at? They come from tiny to big. So luckily the Mishnah deals with that. Number 9. Says the Mishnah, Kezayit She'amru, the kezayit that we're dealing with, lo gadol, is not the super colossal olive, velo katan, and is not the sub-petite olive, ela beinoni, it's the middle olive. Ze aguri, and it gives it a name, it's the aguri olive, which is because it holds the juice in whatever, it's a middle-sized olive. So, okay, fine, now I know, it's not the tiny ones, it's not the big ones, it's the middle ones. How big is a middle-sized olive? And the answer to that question is around 6 cc's, 5, 6, 7 cubic centimeters, that's how big an olive is today at least. Do we know how big olives were in the time of Chazal? So we will see sources later which assume they must have been bigger in the time of Chazal. We'll see why they assume that. Actually, archaeologically, it looks pretty clear that olives were not bigger in the time of Chazal. They're pretty much what they were today, or they are today. How do we know? Well, we have recovered many, many, many olive pits. We haven't recovered any olives, as far as I'm aware, in archaeology. They don't last that long, but many, many olive pits. And from the size of the pit, unless you assume that back in the day, the relative size of the flesh to the pit was different, which may be a little bit, but not vastly, more or less they're the same size. We even have trees today that are thousands of years old, olive trees. They live a very, very long time. In Israel, we certainly have trees which are more or less 1,000, and in Greece, they have some famous trees which date from the time of Chazal or even earlier, and they produce olives the same size as the young trees produce their olives. So unless, again, they've got, like, you know, chaloshes over the years, they've weakened over the years, and the olives have gone down, which is not impossible, but not likely, olives are olives, and they always have been pretty much the same size. Fine. So how big, then, is a kazais? So let's have a look together. Stage one, the Gaonim. The Gaonim, as we saw, lived in Babel, and they were talking about, they were living in the 8th, 9th, 10th century. Look at number 10. Ubishayla le Rav Shirira b'haylishna. The Rav Shirira gone after Shaila on the following basis. Ushishaltim le Fareshi. You've asked me to explain lachem to you. Im yesh mishka le grogeres. Is there a weight, a fixed weight for a grogeres? Now, a grogeres, I'm not going to, you know, get too into the jargon, but grogeres is an important term. A grogeres is the amount of a dried fig. And that is bigger than a kazais, we'll see very clearly. And that's used for many calculations in Hilchos Shabbos, in other areas. Is there a fixed weight for that? Ula zayit, or for the olive. Ula kosevet, or the kosevet, which is the amount of a date, which is relevant in Hilchos Yom Kippur, for eating on Yom Kippur. Veshar shirim, or any of the other shirim, the mishkal ksafim shel arvi'im. Arvi'im, or the Arabs. Can we set a fixed amount? Because obviously, you know, if everybody measures it by their olives, it becomes a bit hefker. Like the concept of a foot. How big is a foot in measurement? Well, is everybody's foot the relevant measurement for their feet? Or do we have a standardized foot measurement? Upirashtem, Shema Rav Hilaigon, he quotes from Rav Hilaigon, a lesser known gon, Perish lachem mishkal beitza, that an egg, we do know, is shisha asa kesef v'shnei shlishi kesef. It's 16 2/3 Arab coins in silver. V'im ein ashar mishkal, might have a beitza yesha mishkal. But if the egg has a silver coin measurement, why does nothing else? Havi yoidim she'ein le'elu shi'urim mishkal kesef, loy b'mishna b'loy b'talma. And he says, I want to tell you that none of the other weights, olives, the kazais, have a fixed measurement in the Talmud. None of them. Kol ita at all. Ve'inu bikshu latet shi'ur mishkal min hadinarim. If they wanted to fix, they had coins in the time of the Mishnah. Of course they did. If they would have wanted to fix measurements by silver and gold coins, they would have done so. They chose not to do so. Ela shenitnu hashirim mikitnit upeiros. They gave the shirim in fruit, in vegetables. Shematzuim tamid. Because they know that olives and dates, etc., are always around, and they never change, interestingly. Here the Gaonim say, we don't have to assume that the olives change. Chazal gave it the amount of an olive, because olives are olives are olives. But actually, what does the Talmud want us to do? Go by the dat shel haro'eh. You can see an olive, so take that volume measurement of an olive. The Haidik, Sasra, Bonim, Sharu, Lefi, Datam, Beitza, Arthur, why did some of the rabbis try to fix the silver amount of an egg? The Loi Sharu Kazais, but never a Kazais, a Kukosevitz, or a date, or Kugret, or a fig. Mishum de Beitza, Tzulim, Ba, Milin, Efisha, because eggs actually are the basic unit for much bigger measurements, Tav, like a cow, which is 24 eggs, or a Sa, or which is 144 eggs, which back in my day they used to call a gross, but I'm not sure they do anymore. The eighth of the Oina, etc. Kulu mishdar in the beta, they're all based on eggs. Lefikach sharu lefidafam, and therefore they needed a silver measurement for an egg. Why? Because if they tell you this is 144 times the size of an egg, you're not going to go out there in nature and find anything that helps you with that. You need to know that in some kind of weight measurement. But when it comes to a kazayis or a kagageris, etc., avalhani shiurim, but the other smaller ones, shakinon, they didn't try and fix that. Lefidato shel roya. So if they leave it to you, you can see an olive, it's the volume of an olive. According to the Gaonim, therefore, a kazayis is exactly what it sounds like. The volume, obviously not area, but the volume amount of an olive. And you can go out there, find an olive tree, and you'll work it out for yourself. Other measurements may be in silver, but this one not. So that's stage one. An olive is an olive. Stage two, the Sfardi Rishonim. Let's move on. The Gemara says in Erevin, Kamashman and Shtei number 11, Shtei Sudas Havyun Shmona Esrei Grogres. So the two meals for the purpose of making an Erev has to contain bread, the amount of 2 Seudot. Says the Gemara, that is 18 figs. Okay? Very interesting. Says the Rambam, over the page, please.
to page number 12, the Rambam paskens this halacha. Ukama shir ha'oichel shemishtatfin bo. What is the shir of the food that you need to make an eruv or a shituf meva'ot in order to create the eruv? As you know, when you make an eruv, you can't just make wires. You have to have a fixed, like the matzahs that they make, that everybody has a portion of. So he says, Kugrogeres kol echad ve'echad. Everyone has to have at least a fig size in the matzah. Mibnei ha'movaya, the people in the Arab, or mibnei ha'medina. V'hushiyeh shmona asar u'pachot. So that's if there are 18 or less people. Aval im hayu merubim alzeh, if there are more people, like in modern day Arabim, not everybody has a fig size of bread. Imagine in northwest London, where there are hundreds of thousands of people, or less than hundreds of thousands of Jews, but tens of thousands of Jews, they can't all have that amount. Aval im hayu merubim alzeh, shirim shtei sudas. But the maximum amount is 2 meals worth, which is shmona asar grogros, 18 figs. Shehein kashisha beitzim beinoinim. Oh, very interesting, beinoinios. 18 figs, he says, is 6 eggs. 18 is 6. Okay? Afilu hayo mishtatim alafim. Rabbi was, even if there are 100,000, tens of thousands of people, shtei sudas ikulam, we can have those 18 figs worth, which is 6 eggs worth for everybody. Now, according to this, very simple math, if there are 18 figs, which equal 6 eggs, how many figs are there in an egg?
Three.
And since a kazayas, an olive, we know, and this is undisputed, is less than a kugrogeres, so how many olives, what is an olive? It has to be less than a third of an egg. Just by logic, it has to be less than a third of an egg. How much less? We're not sure, but it has to be less than a third of an egg. What's that? Oh, we'll get to an egg in a minute. We'll get to an egg in a minute. Just like hold your horses on the egg. But Lisa, let's get the measurements straight. Interestingly, when the Mishnah Brura and the later Achronim bring this shita of the Rambam, they kind of round it up to a third. Look at number 13. The Daf HaRambam, says the Mishnah Brura, the Kazayit, who, how much is the Kazayit? Ker Shlish Beitza. Now, in fairness, he doesn't say a third. He says Ker Shlish Beitza. Around a third of an egg. And as we've seen according to the Rambam, yes. Indeed, it's a little bit less than a third of an egg. In fact, other Sfarim we've shown him were much more clear on this. Look at number 14. This is a Rashba, which actually wasn't available earlier on, but the manuscripts have come out in recent decades. Chamesh Esrei Beitzim, how many? 15 eggs. Shehein Harbe Mishishim Zaytim. 15 eggs, he says, are more than 60 kazaytim. So according to that, how much is a kazayat? A quarter of an egg. Much less than a third. And indeed, the Ritva, I brought you in the note, actually says in one place he thinks that a kazayit is a sixth of an egg. So it's definitely less than a third. Now, you asked, sir, how much is an egg? So the Rambam actually... Good eggs. We'll get to eggs. Eggs come in many sizes too. Luckily, the Rambam gave us a little bit of a steer on this elsewhere. Look at number 15. The Ani Asisi Midav Atachlis. I've done some experimentation, says the Rambam, here in the Perush on the Mishnah. Mashi Echolti, as much as I could, mina dikduk. I've been as accurate as I can. Umatati revi'it. Oh, what's a revi'it? So a revi'it, actually, a kabeitza is 1.5 revi'it, okay? So a revi'it, actually the other way around, I think a revi'it is 1.5 kabeitzas, actually. And it's carried by Chol HaTorah, Tachil mina yayin karov lachaf vav ksafim. Oh, he says here that a revi'it is 26 coins, hanikrim dirham, 26 dirhams of the Arab coins, that's a revi'it of wine. Umina mayim karov lachaf zayin dirham. It's 27 dirhams. So he's defining for us a revi'it. A revi'it, he says, is 27 dirhams of wine or 26 dirhams of wine or 27 dirhams of water. Now, good. So now we have a coin. We know what a revi'it is, and from a revi'it we can work out what a kabeitza is. Because a kabeitza, as I said, is calculated by reference to a revi'it. How much is a dirham? So Rav Chaim Noah, who we'll see soon, is a very important person on that. He said, well, we have these coins. We have coins from the Ottoman Empire. And he weighed a dirham coin, and he found it to be 3.2 grams. 3.2 grams, he weighed the coins, and therefore he calculated that a kabeitza is 57.8 grams. And actually, if you measure an egg, that's more or less what an egg is, a slightly large egg. But he said this is what an egg should be, which for water is around 57 cc. Now, That's very interesting, because what did we say a kezayis was? What proportion of a kebetza? A third or less than a third, maybe even a quarter, maybe less than that. So if you start calculating that, you begin to work out what is a kezayis. It's around a third or less than a third, according to the Rambam, of 57 cc's. Where are we? We're talking about volume. Are we going to be getting... Oh, good. Bachelors also have volume. They're just very thin. You work out the area, you multiply by the thickness, you've got a volume. No, you work out the, you can work out displacement, water displacement. Water displacement, you can work out the volume of everything as long as it doesn't soak it all in. Okay, so we can work out volume. However, we have a slight problem. Because Rav Chaim Noe weighed the Ottoman dirham. Is that the same size as the dirham the Rambam was using? And the answer is no. The Rambam's dirham actually was a little bit smaller than the one that they had in the late Ottoman time. And actually, on that basis, rather than being 3.2 grams, the dirham they had then was around 2.8 grams. So again, if you do the math and work it out, according to that, the kebetz is more like 50 cc's, and the kezayis will therefore be less than around 17. Now, why am I telling you this, blinding you with science on this? Because you'll later see, when you get to opinions as to how much matzah can you eat today, you'll see these numbers appearing. 17, this, that, and the other. I'm showing you where they're coming from. At the end of the day, the Rambam's measurement, which is that a kezayis is a little bit less than a third of a kebetza, and he works out a kebetza by reference to the Arabic coins, we can work that out pretty clearly, and it gets to around a 17 cc volume. Okay? For the third of a kebetza. Now, that's stage two. So we know what the Rambam held. He held that a kezayis is a bit less than a third of an egg. An olive is a third of an egg or less. What about the Ashkenazim? Now, your point before was, did the Ashkenazim have olives? Well, the Rambam had olives, and the Gaonim had olives, but did Rashi have olives? Good question. Where did olives grow in Northern Europe in the Middle Ages? And it's not entirely clear. We'll see soon a hint that seems to say that they didn't have access to olives that much. And certainly Rabbi Slifkin has a very interesting monograph on this. And he writes there, he feels very clearly that they didn't have access to olives. Maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong. You can research it. But one thing is for sure, the Ashkenazim gave a different shear to the Rambam. Have a look here, based on two Gemaras, number 16 and 17. Says the Gemara in Yuma, Shira Chachamim, the rabbis worked out, Ein beit habliya machzik yotim mibeit hatargolot. How much can you swallow at once? Not more than a kebetza. That's what they said. Not more than a kebetza. Okay, fine. Number 17. Vishiru chachamim, also the Gemara says, the ein beit habliya machzik yotim mishnei zeitim. And that is, it's the same as you can't swallow more than two kezeitim. Okay, so if the Gemara said, how much can I swallow? One beta, which equals two kezeitim. So how much is a kezayis? Half a kebetza. Nice and simple. And on that basis, many of the Rishonim in Ashkenaz concluded that indeed a kezayis, based on these Gemaras, an olive was half an egg. Not like the Rambam said, a third or less than a third, but half an egg, based on the Gemaras. Well, why didn't they just go and look at an olive? Meaning, if you look at an olive and you look at an egg, you see very clearly that an olive is not a half an egg. Our olives today are around a ninth, an eighth or a ninth, depending on the size of the olive and the size of the egg, but a medium olive and a medium egg is around an eighth or a ninth. It's not a half. So look at the Rav Yah on the top of page 5. The Rav Yah says, V'kol heichish yitzarech kezayis. Whenever you need a kezayis, tzarech sheyeh machal bahar vacha. You need to kind of be generous with the kezayis. So this already we see stage 3, beginnings of a kind of push towards a bigger kezayis. Why? Because we really don't know what the size of a zayis is, says the Rav Yah. We don't want to make a bracha levatola. He's talking about a bracha achrona. How much do you need to eat in order to make a bracha achrona? He says, you better be generous because we're really not sure how big a zayis is. Based on the Gemara, it sounds like half an egg. Yes?
But what is this opinion? Would you have to eat more than one olive to have a zayis of olives?
Yes, if you would have to eat more than an olive size. Clearly, he says you have to find out what an egg is.
But I mean, and you have to eat more than one olive.
Yeah, but they weren't eating olives quite potentially, as you said before. So where are we up to? The Ashkenazi Rishonim seem to say that an olive is half an egg. So we're growing. We've gone from the size of an olive to a third of an egg to a half of an egg. Now, what is the Shulchan Aruch going to do? Now, the Shulchan Aruch was Sfardi or Ashkenazi?
Sfardi.
Sephardi. Did he know olives? For sure. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. He knew olives better than we know olives. So look at what he says. In Hilchot Matzeh, number 19. Shir Kazayas, the shir of a Kazayas, Yesh Omrim Dehavi Kechatzi Beitza. There is an opinion he brings that it is a half an egg. That's all he says. Now that's very interesting, because you would expect the Shulchan Aruch to follow whom? The Rambam. The Rambam is king for the Shulchan Aruch. Usually, the Rif, the Rosh, the Rambam, the Rif and the Rosh are not clear on the amount that the olive is. The Rambam seems to be clear it's less than a third. Why does he go with the Ashkenazim? Why does he go with the Tosfos, the Ashkenazim, who said a half? So the answer seems to be, he doesn't. He says, Yesh Omrim. Why would he give the halacha and say, Yesh Omrim? He would just say, it's a chatzi beitza. Because elsewhere in Hilchos Eruvim, he does exactly what we saw the Rambam did, and says, how much is an olive? He brings two opinions. At the end of number 20, he says, this 18 grogros, shehem kashisha beitzim, v'yesh omrim shehem kashmana beitzim. He brings the two opinions, and he says, actually, there are two opinions on how big a kezias is. It's either a third, or it's more like a half. So he brings both opinions. Why in Hilchos Matzah does he only bring the strict opinion that says it's a half? Because it's a mitzvah, d'oraisa. And he wants you to be strict. And this indeed is the conclusion of the Mishnah Brura, number 21. Le'inyan dina, the mitzvah d'oraisa, when it comes to a mitzvah d'oraisa, could go in mitzvahs aseh d'achilat matzah, yesh lahachmir. He's commenting on this Shulchan Aruch. We have to be more machmir. Ve'le'echol al kompanim kechetzi beitza. We have to eat a half an egg. Im loishin hu chole. But of course, if you're ill, v'kasha lo le'echol, or it's hard for you to eat kechatzi beitza, yochel ismoch al Rambam. You can rely on the Rambam, he says. Meaning the Rambam hasn't gone away. He seems to understand that me'ikah ha'din, we paskin like the Rambam, that it's a third or less of a third of an egg. But really, we should try to eat a half an egg, a chatzi beitza. Well, the inyan maror, when it comes to maror, v'chia gavna, or obviously korech, etc., shehu d'rabbanon, yesh ismoch b'dievet al achal kishlish beitza. You can certainly rely on the Rambam for a rabbinic law. Yes. We'll get to the time leak in a minute. We'll get to the time leak. We'll get to that. Kidei chilas pras. We'll get there. The Taz. Yes.
When they say you have to eat a kazayit, does it mean at least the kazayit, but you could really eat more?
Well, for sure you can always eat more. And in fact, the Vilna Gaon, as we saw last week, held that the more you eat, the more the mitzvah you get. And therefore there is obviously a push to eat more, but that's the minimal amount, a kazayit. Now, we see here from the Shulchan Aruch that we now have two clear things in our minds. Ideally, we eat a half an egg. And b'dievid, like the Rambam, if you can't eat a half an egg for a Torah mitzvah, you can rely on the Rambam, which is a third, or even a little bit less than a third of an egg. Seems very clear so far. For rabbinic mitzvahs, there's no reason to be machmir, and then you can rely on the Rambam shita of a third of an egg. The Taz asks in number 22, why don't we just measure an olive? Okay? So he says, look, two reasons. Again, the Taz lived in Poland in the 17th century. I'm not sure how many olives he had, but I don't know, I can't say. He gives two reasons. He says, number one, we have a Masorah. And this is actually more the meta-halachic, hashkafic almost point, which is, how do we paskin halacha? Do we go out and start measuring things, or do we base it on halachic tradition, halachic Masorah? He says, we have a Masorah. We're Ashkenaz, and we have a Masorah. It's a half an egg. Maspik. That's what we do. It's a half an egg. And he says, and also, we can only assume that the olives were bigger in the time of Chazal. Now, why would he say that the olives were bigger in the time of Chazal? So, if you look here, he says, clearly, that the Eretz Yisrael is praised for its fruit. Okay, look in the first line. Kasav Rishali, quotes the Mashal, number 22. She'ein ze tema. Don't be surprised that we measure a half an egg. Lefi sheperishel zayin minim kenishtabcha bu Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is praised for the zayin minim, the shivas haminim. Hayu meshunim begadalag begalasam lefi hateva. They were different in the old days. Everything's getting smaller. Why is everything getting smaller? Yeah, Yeridas Hadoros. And we'll see this in a minute with the tzlach. There is a hashkafic push to say that from Sinai onwards, everything only goes down. Now, this, of course, is not a halachic concept. It's a hashgafic concept. But it feeds into the halachic idea that if our olives look smaller today and you're wondering why we're using a half a kebetza when they're much less, the answer is, mistama, things used to be bigger than they are now. Yes? Oh, very interesting. So, but is that pshat?
in the Meraglim? Is that how that works when it brings it when they bring them on the pole? Were they really enormous, etc.? Or is that also like a Hashkafic idea praising Eretz Yisrael? So stage four, where are we up to? The Shulchan Aruch is saying, try and eat a half an egg. If you can't eat a half an egg, a third of an egg is okay according to the Rambam. Next, page six. The next question we have to ask, which we haven't even raised yet, is an egg with the shell or an egg without the shell? Because obviously, you know, if you boil an egg and then you take off the shell, what's inside is quite a bit smaller than the egg with the shell. How much smaller? Actually, around 11% smaller. And the post can say different things. Some of them subtract more like 5% or 10%, whatever, but it is smaller.
In volume or in weight?
In volume. In volume. Let's keep volume. I understand, but let's stay with volume, because we'll see that we're mostly working with volume. It's certainly smaller in volume. Take the volume of an egg with its shell, and then boil it and take off the shell, and take the volume of an egg inside. It's significantly smaller. So what are we going to use for matzah? So, interestingly, for different areas of halacha, sometimes they use the egg with a shell, and sometimes they use egg without a shell. For example, the shear for taking challah is the beitza with the shell. The shear for tumat ochlim, for the tumat of food, is actually the egg without the shell. So what are we going to do for matzah? So different poskim said different things, but again, the Mishnah Berurah ends up being machmir. Look in 23, says the Mishnah Berurah, dehavi kechati beitza, we're going to eat a half an egg, beinonit, medium-sized egg, im klipata. In klipata, and that also pushes up a little bit the volume of matzah that we're eating, because we're choosing the egg with the shell rather than the egg without the shell. So that's stage five. Stage six, and this is where everything balloons. The tzlach came along and said, Yecheskel Landau, the Noda B'Yehuda, and said the following. It says in Psochim that a revius can be measured in fingers. Let's have a look at number 24. It actually sums. Amar Rav Chisda. Revi'it shel Torah. How big is the revi'it? Now, a revi'it is the amount of, like, wine that you'd need for a kiddush, etc. How big is that? It's etzba'im, al etzba'im, v'roim etzba'im, v'chetzi etzba, v'chomish etzba. Now, they didn't have fractions or decimal places in those days, but basically what they're saying here is that the amount, the cubic amount for a revi'it is the same as two thumbs, multiplied by two thumbs, multiplied by 2.7 thumbs. How do they get this? So without giving you all of the calculations, I've brought them all on the sheet, you can look at them all later. Basically, it's from a mikveh. The Gemara there says a mikveh is 3 cubic amot, which is based on the size of a person. It's an amma by an amma by 3 amos. Okay? And they also give the size of a mikveh in seah, which is a liquid measurement. Okay, an amma is a solid volume, a seah is a liquid volume, and they say that the mikveh, which is 3 ammas, cubed ammas, is also 40 seah. Now you can break down and break back those ammas and seahs into smaller measurements, and believe me, what you get is that one revius is 10.8 cubic thumbs. That's what it says in the Gemara. Now, comes along the tzlach, the Noda B'Yehuda, and says, we've got a bit of a problem here. Look at number 25. Since we love our mitzvahs and we want to eat our kezayis matzah, and so too maror, and we want to drink a revius shel Torah, a proper revius of 4 cups. I want to clarify exactly how much we need to eat. I've done experiments, he says. I've been in the kitchen trying this out. I just can't get it to the Shulchan Aruch. How much does the Shulchan Aruch say? Half an egg. B'dieved, a third of an egg. He says it doesn't work. Ki be'emet mevor b'Shulchan Aruch simen taf peivav. Sheshir kezayis hu kechati beitza. The Shulchan Aruch says it's a half an egg. V'amnon lefisha nidbar li, I've worked out, he says, al pi medida, I've done measurements, shehabeitzas hamatsuyas asev yameinu, the eggs we have now, he's in Central Europe in the 18th century, our eggs must be half the size of the eggs they were using. Why? Everything must have changed. Because why? Because he did the thumb measurement. You work out two thumbs by two thumbs by 2.7 thumbs. It comes to around 160 cubic centimeters. How big is an egg? Very small. Compared to that, 50-60 cubic centimeters. how can you tell me that this equals this? It just doesn't work. So he says, you have to say, or shehagadolim, agoidlim, nitgadlu. All the sums have got bigger since Chazal were measuring sums. And they're bigger than the sums were in the time of the Tanaim. Or shehabeitza nitkatnu, or the eggs have got smaller. And the eggs must be smaller. I mean, something has to have shifted. Now it works out that the thumb measurement is more or less double the egg measurement. So you have two choices. Either the thumbs have got bigger, or the eggs have got smaller. V'yadua, and we know shehadoras holchim u'mitmatim. We know that the doras only go down. Yuridas hadoras, things only go down, never go up. Hashkafik point, as we said. V'iyesha shehagudul shelanu gadol yosem agudulim shehayu b'me'achachach me'ashav. It can't be that our thumbs are bigger than the thumbs that they had. Al korchach habeitzim bizmanenu zibatu. Therefore, the eggs must be smaller. And he comes along and says, and the Mishnah Berurah brings this lahalach in 26. That because of this problem, that the slach has identified, and he wasn't the first, by the way, he roots this back into the Tashbat as well, and other earlier Rishonim. He says, I'm not the first person to notice this. Says the Mishnah Berurah, we have a problem here. Because it sounds like whatever measurement Chazal say to eat, we better double it up. Because we're not sure how to do this, because, look, the eggs just don't work out with the fingers. Look in number 26. Da, you should know, the Mashikasav Machabe, what the Shulchan Aruch writes, Kezayis Chetzi Beitza, Lav Milsa Psikta Hubizmanen, we can't follow that today. The Yesh, number 26, Yesh Ma'achronim Shehuchichu, there are many Achronim that have proved, De Beitzim Amutsuim Bizmanenu Nitkatnu Harbe, that our eggs are much smaller. Adla Mechta, almost a half the size, Mikafisha Hayu Biyamim, Yamim Akadmainen, Shebehem Shiru Chachamim. Therefore, he says, I tell you halachically, every time kashir hu kacheti beta, any time it says you have to eat a half egg, sarich l'sha'ar b'kabeta, you have to eat a full egg of today's eggs. Shibizmanenu. And he leaves it at that. So, very interestingly, he leaves it ultimately, that how much matzah do you have to eat, l'chatchila on Seder night, a full modern day egg size. Because it must be that the eggs have halved since the time of Chazal. Now, is that the case, that the eggs have halved since the time of Chazal? I'm not an expert on these issues. Again, Rabbi Slipkin's piece on this is very well researched, and there's a lot of blogs and posts and all sorts of people who agree with him, disagree with him, that said you can follow that. I've brought you all of the references and links down at the bottom. But eggs, it seems, have grown rather than shrunk. If you look at what eggs used to be like, and we have eggs from Pompeii, that got frozen in the destruction of Pompeii, and we have evidence of this. The eggs have been selectively bred to get bigger and bigger. Obviously, every farmer takes the chicken that lays its biggest eggs and breeds that chicken with other chickens, and you end up with eggs getting bigger as animals. Look at the size of turkeys now. Turkeys are so big now that they don't even have the ability to breed naturally. They're so big they can't even connect with each other. You have to artificially breed them, which, you know, is like how much we've selectively grown the domesticated crops and animals that we have. So he says eggs probably are bigger as well. What about thumbs? Are people's thumbs bigger today than they used to be, or smaller today? Or the same? Well, a lot of people today clearly are much taller than they used to be. Just go to a castle that was built in the 12th century and try and walk through the door and see what happens when you bang your head on the lintel. People from the beginning of the 18th century started getting bigger and bigger because of nutrition and all sorts of other things. So it does seem that people are bigger today. Look at the mummies of the pharaohs, okay? When they're mummified, they probably shrink a bit, but they do seem to be quite a lot smaller. Even in our own lifetime, my great-grandmother, Alea Shalom, was 4'6" tall, 4'7". She was tiny. I don't know anybody that small today. Okay? And just look at the next generation up, all these 6-foot tall Jewish boys. When were there ever men, Jewish men, who were 6 feet tall? Okay? Now there are plenty. Something clearly is changing. Now, is that anecdotal? Maybe. But this is not so clear. Even more importantly, go over to page 7 a second, the Mishnah Berurah himself raises a big question on this. Look at the top of 27. Lefi ani yadaiti, in my humble opinion, after the kushyasohu, he kushy gadoyla b'chamura, even though his question, the note of Yehuda's challenge about the shrinking eggs or the changing measurements, is a serious question, al shiurenu, on what we have a shiurim,
Aval mineged shitato, I have against his view, yesh gam kein kush yechamura. I have an even bigger question, or a equally significant problem. What's his problem? I'll explain to you outside the source. His problem is that Chazal say that the amount that you can hold within your two cheeks is more than a revius. Okay? A person can get within their cheeks more than a revius of liquid. So, says the Mishnah Brura, well, okay, fine. But if you say, like the Tlach seems to be saying, that all the measurements have to be doubled up, you would have to say that in a person's cheeks, they could get double a revius. And he says, I've been round everyone and tested their cheeks and seen how much they can get in their cheeks. And no one can even get close to that in their cheeks. I tested my own cheeks 2 days ago, and I can get just under 100 cc's within both of my cheeks together, okay? And according to the Mr. Murray, he's saying if you double up the shirim, you'll have to be 150. No one can do that. And therefore he says, I've got a bit of a problem with this, that it just doesn't seem to work for Matthias. And indeed, right. You've got to swallow an egg, you swallow two eggs. Don't try that one at home. Don't even try one egg. Rav Chaim Noah therefore comes along and says in the 20th century, we are not obligated to take this doubling up of shirim as halachically binding. And in fact, he does not require the shirim to be doubled. However, the Chazon Ish quite famously said, listen, shirim are not based on measuring people's cheeks or olives or even eggs. Shirim are based on halachic masorah. This is an underlying meta-halachic debate going on here. Since we have now a halachic masorah from the Nodav Yehuda, who is the gadol, one of the gadol haposkim of Ashkenazi Europe, therefore we have to follow his tzak, and therefore ideally the shirim have to be doubled up. I hope you're beginning to realize here now how things are beginning to grow. We've gone from an olive to a third of an egg, to a half of an egg, to a half of an egg with a shell, to a doubled up one of those. And the last stage in this is stage 7, which is, are we going to measure by weight or are we going to measure by volume? And someone, you mentioned that before. All the measurements we've made so far are by volume. And this is based on a Mishnah in 28, a Mishnah in Uktzin. When do we ever get a chance to bring a Mishnah in Uktzin in a Shir? So that itself to me is a simcha, to be able to bring that. But Uktzin deals with that, the Tumah and Tahara status of the stalks of food. Okay? And it talks about how you measure food for Tumah and Tahara. Pas sufganit. Or it's actually probably safuganit. What is pas sufganit? It's a puffy bread that's got a lot of air bubbles in it. Mishdari b'kamoshihi. You measure it as it is. You don't squish it, says the Mishnah, and just kind of compress it and try and find a minimal volume. If it looks this big as a kazayit, whatever, then that's how big it is. The im yesh bo chalal, if it has a big air bubble in it, so then you can squish the air bubble if it has an unusual bubble in it, but otherwise you measure with the air bubbles, little air bubbles that are in there. You don't have to compress every kind of food. The Rambam takes on this, most of the poskim take on this, that when we measure food, we always measure by volume, number 29. Kama shir chala, what is the shifa chala? Kamo shlosh, v'arbayim beitzim, 43 eggs, v'chonish beitzim and a fifth of an egg, kagufa beitza beinonis, a medium-sized egg, like a mishkala, not the weight of an egg. Do not start with grams, do not start with weight, you go with volume. So to the Mishnah Berurah paskins like this, all the major poskim paskin like this. Fine, we're measuring cc's. Comes along Rav Yaakov Sofer, the Kaf HaChaim, very important Sephardi Rav in Eretz Yisrael, in the early 20th century, number 31. He says the following, V'cheina minag achshav, pashut, etzel bali hayira. The current minag these days for people who are concerned to do mitzvahs properly, the sha'er kol ha'shiurim, dehainu kezayis matzah, all the shiurim, like a kezayis matzah on Pesach, kezayis maru, kezayis l'shiur, brach achrona, for mishkal. We have to start with grams. Ve'ei l'shonos, and you better not change this. Now, once you start measuring in grams, because matzah is less dense, then usually you can say that 1 gram of water is 1 cubic centimeter. But matzah, you're going to end up with a much bigger volume to get the same number of grams because it's very, very light and it's very porous in that sense. And therefore, once you end up going with grams as a weight measurement, you're really increasing the size of matzah that you have to eat. Okay? Not all the Sephardi poskim went with that. I brought you in the bottom here, Rav Abba Shaul, Rav Benzion Abba Shaul said actually that was only when the matzahs were denser than they are today. Now our matzahs are not so dense, and therefore you don't go with this, but some people do. Where does that leave us? Go over the page, please. Let's try and bring this to some kind of conclusion. We've had seven stages. From an olive, to the third of an egg, to the half of an egg, to the Shulchan Aruch who brings both, to this, an egg with a klipa, to a doubling up of the shiurim because of the problem with the thumbs and the eggs, to a conversion into grams, into weight. What do we do, Lemaisa? So, I brought you on page 8, lots and lots of different opinions. Just look for a second at the list of names I've brought you there. And different people quote the same Rav as saying different things. So going from largest to smallest, Rav Avad Yosef, who of course goes with the weight measurement rather than the volume, basically is telling you, and I brought you the sources here, that you have to eat more or less one machine matzah for every kazayas. Now, a machine matzah, not all machine matzahs are the same size. Certainly not hand matzahs. Hand matzahs vary enormously in size and thickness, and therefore you can't really even give a shear in hand matzahs. It depends on your matzahs.
How much
does that weigh? You have to work out how many you get in a kilo. I didn't take a measurement of this one. Weight is easy. You can just weigh the box and weigh the matzahs, and then you can work that out. But machine matzahs are fairly standard, although I noticed that in England, where a lot of people at least used to eat Rakusen's matzahs, and I'm from Leeds, so I can give a plug to Rakusen's matzahs, if you know what that means, and if not, don't worry, they're a little bit smaller than the Israeli machine matzahs. So you can't always assume a machine matzah is a machine matzah, but if you're eating one machine matzah per kazayas, and you're eating, at the end of the day, we try l'chatchila to eat 5 kazaysim, 2 for motzi matzah, like I said last week, 1 for korich, and 2 for afikoman, you end up eating 300 cubic centimeters, more or less, of matzah. Now, that is a remarkable shift from a kazayas, where a kazayas today is around 6, 7, 8 cubic centimeters, and we're now up to 300. That is a very big difference, but that is in the extreme. Others hold less. The Chazon Ish is holding more like 50 cubic centimeters. You go down Rav Shimon Ida, basically quite famous. He says you should try to eat a 2/3 of a machine matzah per kazayas. And I brought you all the way down through Rav Bodner, Rav Chaim Noah, etc. Rav Mordechai Willig, an important posek for the OU and YU, he says 22.5 cc's. That's around just under a half a matzah, okay? Going down, he says, in case of illness, most people go with a 17, around a third of a matzah in a case of illness. That's very clear where that comes from. That's the Rambam's third of a kibetza that he measured out with the coins. But in cases of real need, and again, a person has to ask a posik on this, there are posikim that say, and Rav Chaim Volozhin apparently had a famous shita, that at the end of the day, the volume of an olive is the volume of an olive. Okay? Now, in order to eat that small amount, you really need to ask a shayla, because that is, according to most poskim, really very small. But certainly the amount of a third of a matzah for someone who has difficulty is itself quite a well-known set. How fast you need to eat it? So Chazal give the shear, which is a kazayis v'kadei achilas pras. A kazayis in the time it would take you normally to eat a pras. A pras is 6 kazaysim. Or maybe even 8 kazaysim. So Chazal is saying that you should really be eating no slower than 1/6 regular eating pace. Once you're eating slower than 1/6 of your normal eating pace, then that's too slow. That's called nibbling. Now, obviously, according to most poskim, the bigger you double up your shear, the more you double up the time that you have to eat it. However, I would tell you that there are poskim that say, no, you have to eat the biggest shear in the smallest size, and you end up having to eat a very large amount of matzah in 2 to 3 minutes, which, according to many other poskim, is really not what it was meant to be, and that itself might not be derech cheres, that's certainly not derech eretz, to eat that fast, and it's not good for your health either. Yes. Well, that's the last one is your choice. That is your choice and your family's preference. In terms of why time is needed, time is obviously relevant, because to say someone has to eat a kazayis, what, a kazayis within a whole day? No, there has to be a time frame which is really eating. I just want to finish off on the last page and bring you some meta-halachic considerations. I just want to read you these last two pieces very quickly. Two very different approaches. One is from the yeshiva world, which I imagine would bring in your black hat question. But look at what he says, an important posik on this, Rav Yair Hoffman. He says, let us remember that for centuries Jews have tried, number 32, to fulfill mitzvahs in the most ideal manner possible. Often what this means is to fulfill the mitzvah in a manner that is consistent with the views of as many of the Rishonim as possible. And that's a brisker approach. We try to be yotzeh as many shittas as we can, so that we're not, God forbid, doing it wrong according to anybody. Some people who are not accustomed to this notion will find such dedication extreme. Others, however, will realize that dedication to mitzvahs and Torah observance is a manifestation of ahavat Hashem, the love we have towards God. If you actually take what he says in that website, and he's right what he says, we want to try and do the mitzvah the best way we can, it turns out that you're eating, according to him, extremely large amounts of matzah, which he suggests that you swallow in one go. Okay? Now, his point, metahalachically, is correct. However, I just wanted to end with another rather contrary piece in number 33, Rabbi Aryeh Klapper. Let us concede, he says, that sometimes the most ideal manner possible, and he wrote this the day after Rabbi Hoffman wrote his, it's a response, the most ideal manner possible to fulfill a mitzvah is to engage in the Rishon position maximization, trying to do the most according to everybody. But surely there are other values as well, both general and matzah specific, relating both to the letter and the spirit of the law, such as Hidur mitzvah, Simchas mitzvah, Oneg Yontef, Achila b'te'avon, avoiding Achila gasa, which is gross eating, and last but not least, avoiding potentially fatal behavior. In other words, there are very good reasons, he says, to oppose Rabbi Hoffman's outcomes, even if one concedes the truth of his specific halakhic analysis of matzah. Rabbi Hoffman simply dismisses popular practice, minag, on the ground that it strays from the Shulchan Aruch. He grants mimetic culture no power at all against books, and that's a whole shiur in of itself. How do we work out halacha? Is it based on tradition, mimetic culture? Meaning we mimic our ancestors. You saw what your grandfather did and what his grandfather did and what his grandfather did. Or do we say no, we go back to the books and we try and work it out afresh. And I referenced at the bottom, the very last footnote, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's famous Rupture and Reconstruction article, which deals with this in detail, where he's asking, why are the shiurim of our grandparents now not good enough for us? Very interesting our article, and I really advise you to read that. That's a bigger question. But for now, at least, we've worked out a little bit how much matzah to eat on Pesach. Next week, please God, we're going to continue talking more about thin and thick, soft and hard, machine and non-machine. So we'll move on from that. Yeah.